But we begin this hour on the streets of Brazil, where the World Cup tournament has become a lens on the country's political strife and inequality. Brazilian taxpayers covered $3.5 billion of the total $12 billion cost of the World Cup, the most expensive soccer tournament ever. Brazil's government has estimated that related tourism and spending will add more than $3 billion back into the country's economy. But hosting the mega event has come with an onslaught of mega problems, including highlighting widespread corruption, embezzlement, and what is viewed by millions as disregard for the interests of the poor and middle class in Brazil. All this comes with the country set to hold elections this fall. Eliane Cantanhede is a newspaper columnist and TV commentator for Brazil's Globo News and Poata. Eliane, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, the first match is on Thursday, Brazil versus Croatia. What's it like on the ground there right now?
Well, everybody's asking the same thing here in Brazil, because all the world knows that Brazilians, we love soccer, but at this time, people are very angry. People don't understand how the government spends so much for stadiums instead of using the money for education, health, and better legacy for population.
Well, Eliane, Brazil has had a fast-growing economy for the last decade and has sort of been enjoying its moment in the sun here, not only with the World Cup, but also with the Olympic Games. The last 4 years, the economy's kind of sputtered. This all has to be related.
Yes, the problem is that you have two problems. One is the mix of the World Cup with the elections. We are going to have elections in October for presidencies, for governments, and for deputies. And the second thing is, as you said, is the problem with the economy, because Brazil was doing very, very well 20 years, I would say, since Mr. Cardoso presidency, and then with Lula presidency. We were doing very well. All the world was looking for Brazil, but not now. The growth is very, very low. We are having problem with inflation. People are not happy. In the polls for the elections, you see that up then 70% want change. That's not good for the re-election of the president, Dilma Rousseff.
You know, on the one hand, Eliane, it strikes me, we in the foreign press, at least in relation to Brazil, are reporting on strife and protests and social inequality and all the things that are going on in Brazil. But on the other hand, you know, a country that does have a history of totalitarian rule is undergoing a moment of civic debate. There are protests, but there is a real debate about the future of Brazil and political and economic inequality going on, probably that wouldn't have taken place 20 years ago.
Yes, you know, this protest, they have a very bad way. You can look at in two ways. One way is that bad because people are having problems to go to work. For example, in São Paulo, some people are taking about 3 hours to go from the airport to the middle town. So it's a problem, you know, for people. Everybody's angry. But in the other hand, we are making protests that are not so violent. People are not going to the protest with guns or something like that. I think that it's a democratic way to protest. And we have a huge country. We have a very huge economy, but we have a rich country with a lot of poor people. This kind of thing, we have to protest. People are tired of paying so much, you know, for the government, so many taxes, and having back so little, you know, in health, in education, because we have to pay for schools, we have to pay for doctors, we have to pay to hospitals, and these kind of things. I think the protests have, they are not only a bad thing.
Well, it is a moment of world attention on Brazil and a moment of self-examination for Brazilians during this World Cup, which starts on Thursday. Eliane Cantanhede is a newspaper columnist and TV commentator for Brazil's Globo News and Poata. Eliane, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, and I'd like to the world to look to Brazil as a very huge, very important country, and with a very kind population.
Well, there's the view of one Brazilian down in the country. How about a view of a Brazilian, an ordinary guy who's living in the United States? And that's who I have in the studio with me now. Rodrigo Bendao was born and raised in Brazil. He now lives in Queens in New York. He grew up in Rio. His mother and sister are still there in an apartment just four blocks from the famous Maracanã Stadium, right?
That's correct, yeah. They live just at the very start of Vila Isabel, which is walking distance from Maracanã.
If people need to know, it is the Yankee Stadium of Brazilian soccer times 100.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah.
Well, you're hearing, Rodrigo, this conversation that we're having about the political and economic strife that's going on in your country, sort of grafted onto like the most glorious sports event, cultural event probably that the country could experience. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's true that a lot of sectors have used the World Cup to put forward some of the demands that they've been asking for a while. But it wouldn't be fair to ask them to wait for the World Cup to end, you know, to stay as things are and to sort of just wait until the foreigners come and have a good time and then, you know, demand what they really need to demand. So I think that the protests right now are a continuation of what happened last year, and I think that people are no longer resigned in Brazil. They really feel like they have the right to go on the streets and protests. And as a matter of fact, the protests have been mostly peaceful. And if we had some problems, they've been because of police brutality and the way that police have been responding to these protests.
Well, in that sense, then, is this heartening to you, given the legendary social inequality that exists across Latin America, but in this case, in Brazil in particular? As I mentioned to Eliane, a country that does have a long history of totalitarian rule, these days there are a lot of problems, but you seem to sort of be gratified by a democratic process going on there.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's been really good to see people on the streets and really have their anger used in a positive way. You know, I think that there were some sad events and there were deaths that happened since the protests last year, but to me, it's been mostly a positive development in Brazil. And I think what people need to understand is that the World Cup and the Olympic Games were sold to the Brazilian people as a way to have all these legacy projects, you know, put place, and as a way to improve public transportation, as a way to improve safety, as a way to improve the quality of life in favelas. And the stadiums were built, but a lot of these other projects were not, haven't been finished. So people are, you know, have all the right to be angry and to ask questions and to go on the streets and demand.
And then what is your suspicion here, I should ask? Mm-hmm. Soccer stadiums and new roads that lead to the soccer stadiums are fantastic. They're on the world stage for a month. But people who need medical care, people who need a decent education or live in a favela with bad sanitation don't need a soccer stadium. What happens at the end of July when the tournament is over? Do you worry that the world turns away and sort of a political inertia takes over in Brazil? Or is this a moment, do you think, where real change can happen?
No, I think real change can happen, and I think this is going to continue going forward, not just because of the Olympic Games, but just because internally Brazilians are mobilized and they've been organized across sectors and categories to really demand for better living conditions. I think that public transportation is a big issue in Brazil, and Rio and São Paulo are very congested cities, and there hasn't been enough done to alleviate the conditions and to create better transportation systems for the poor and for the middle class. And that's a struggle that's going to continue, and whoever becomes president in October has to answer to those demands.
Now, speaking of congestion, let's get personal for a moment. I mentioned that your mom and sister live a couple of blocks away from Maracanã. What are they doing this week? I don't know that I would hang around there.
Yeah, I mean, they're really thinking about whether to leave or, you know, getting a visa to come to the United States is a bit hard, and it's not something that can be done overnight. So they're thinking, you know, that maybe they could come visit me. My sister hasn't been to New York City in the last 12 years. I think they're worried about, again, not necessarily about the crowds, because there's a samba school in Vila Isabel, and we're used to loud music and to people on the streets drinking, having fun. Mm-hmm. This is more about fear of tough response from the police or just Maracanã and that neighborhood not being organized enough to really you know, respond to the needs of the tourists and things like that.
Now, if most Americans, Rodrigo, don't know about Maracanã, and most don't, and I didn't until I read a little bit about this, it is also the site of sort of a curse that hangs over Brazil. And I'm talking about 1950. I'm talking about the last time the World Cup was there, when all the Brazilian team needed was a tie in the final game. They lost. And my understanding is that this has really penetrated the Brazilian psyche for 64 years. Yeah. What's going to happen this time?
Well, I think everyone is hoping for the Brazilian team to overcome this curse. Now, this happened in the 1950s, so I wasn't alive, but it's definitely a story that you're told when, you know, as you grow up in Brazil. But yeah, I mean, they needed a tie, and at the very last minute, Uruguay won. Right. Yeah. 2-1. So I think that the country went silent, and the goalkeeper, who made a mistake at the wrong time in the wrong place, sort of became ostracized after that. It's kind of a sad story.
Well, it's a sad story, and it makes everyone else wonder if there is an opportunity for redemption here. We talk sometimes in religious terms about sports, but it's Brazil.
It is a religious matter in Brazil. That's why it's so interesting to see not every single street painted right now. The mood has shifted so much, even in relation to other World Cups that were not hosted in Brazil. It is a religious matter. And growing up in Brazil, you can't but be surrounded by this almost suffocating soccer culture. You know, you learn to love it in one way or another, and I have. But yeah, I think Brazilians will come out and they will cheer for the team. I'm not worried about that. And once the game starts, people are going to be watching. And I hope that Brazil wins, of course.
But can Brazil find redemption in World Cup soccer in 2014? Can they find an answer to their earthly concerns as well? Rodrigo Bendao, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.